It's time to head into the barn. This is the Bet America Radio Network. You're in the barn. In the barn. Talking horse racing news, events, and a whole lot more. Here's your host, Jason Beam.
All right, welcome into the barn. The Bet America Radio Network. And we are broadcasting from beautiful Portland, Oregon, right on the banks of the Columbia River right now, from the Red Lion at Jansen Beach. I was originally going to be home, and this was going to be my first broadcast, you know, back in the actual barn studios in Seattle, but the road trip took a little bit of a left turn, and we'll talk about that here in a second. We're going to be joined a little bit later on in the show by Kevin Perreault, who is a handicapper who has qualified not just once, but twice now for the Horse Player World Series. He's won two of the contests that we hold on Friday night at BetAmerica.com to win. It's a winner take all. Takes a seat in the Horse Player World Series. You get, you know, airfare, the whole nine yards. And Kevin is now a double qualifier for that tournament. So we're going to talk to him not just about those tournaments, but about his career as a horse player and a lifelong horse player. And I look forward to talking to him. He's a New York guy, and I love talking with New York guys about racing. They have a great passion for it, and they always have great stories, and you know, they're just awesome characters and part of the fabric of horse racing for sure. So Kevin Perreault going to join us as our guest tonight, but this will be the final trip on the Barn Roadshow. Man, it's been a long and whirlwind 9 days. I think I left Sunday night last week, so yeah, it'll be 9 or 10 days total, but. Man, Vegas was so much fun, and it was so great to meet all the guys from Bet America. Met a ton of handicappers, met a ton of other people, and just really cool. And so I was actually going to stay in Vegas for another week. I was having such a nice time and do shows from down there for a week and then drive home this weekend. But I woke up Sunday morning at like 5:30. I'm an early morning kind of guy. So I woke up at like 5:30, and I thought, you know what, I'm going to go to Santa Anita. So I got in the car, drove straight to Santa Anita. It was like beautifully sunny, and everybody kept saying, oh, it's raining in LA. And like the whole way, you know, all the way through Baker and Barstow, it was just beautiful, sunny, you know, Nevada, California weather. Then I get to the mountains that kind of, I think it's the Cajon Pass or whatever it is, that goes down through you know, kind of spits you out at San Bernardino, basically. And it was just monsooning, rain, wind, everything. I couldn't see 50 feet in front of me, you know, going 40 miles an hour down the freeway with everybody else. And everybody in California, when it rains, for some reason, they put their hazards on. I think it's such a rare thing for them. Everybody freaks out. But, you know, finally got to Santa Anita, went upstairs, sat in the turf terrace, and had a lovely breakfast. I got to meet a couple of friends who, you know, from Twitter, who I talked with numerous times, but haven't got to meet. So hello to Bailey and Ruben. Thanks for coming by at the table. Got to see Scott Hazelton, a friend from the TVG. I know they're a competitor, but, you know, I'm not afraid to say, hey, Scott's my buddy. And I love talking to Scott. He's actually one of my favorite analysts to interview. I think he's one of the most prepared guys. He does his homework. He's a really good broadcaster. What made Hazelton one of my favorite broadcasters was the Byron Breeders' Cup after the race. Him and Richard Migliori did such a great job of covering that because it was such a crazy, hectic couple of minutes there. And it's one of the best broadcasts I've seen for racing was those two in those 5 or 6 minutes that we had a, you know, inquiry. They had a great conversation, analyzed it well. And if I don't know if it's around on video or YouTube or whatever, but definitely check that out. But it was good to see Scott, but it just poured the whole time there. So I only stuck around for a few races. And while I was there, I got an email from the new general manager at Portland Meadows, where I used to work. And he said, hey, our announcer came up with this reason why he can't work for the weekend. Can you come up and call the races Monday, Tuesday? Now, this is Sunday, and I don't fly because I'm a nutcase. And I thought to myself, I was like, well, even if I left now, I wouldn't get there. You know, I wouldn't get to Portland by Monday. And so I told the guy, I said, I probably can't do it. You know, I might be able to get there for Tuesday, but we'll see. But I wouldn't count on it. And so I was so I spent all day Monday driving. I drove from L.A. through Bakersfield, up through Sacramento to Redding, and then finally ended up stopping in Medford because it was about 7 o'clock at night and I was getting tired. I checked on the internet. Turns out Portland, they just didn't even use an announcer on Monday. They had Jerry Coles, the racing secretary, go up and do the scratches and changes, and then that was kind of it. You know, they posted everything on the on the television signal, but everybody I talked to some friends that were there. They said it was really weird. Like, you know, you're seeing the race go off, and there's just there's no sound, and the whole place is kind of quiet. But so anyway, so this morning I wake up at, 5:30 in Medford, and I get out of my hotel room and there's snow on the ground, and I'm just like, oh, you got to be kidding me. And so luckily it was kind of just wet snow, but it was still, it kind of took me by surprise. I wasn't expecting it. But I drove through Oregon this morning, and I got up to Portland about 11 o'clock and grabbed a sandwich from Jersey Mike's, and I pulled up to Portland Meadows and I went into the main office and 20 minutes to post. I said, hey, do you still need an announcer? And they're like, yeah. So I got to fill in calling the races today, the Tuesday races, so February 2nd. But it was so much fun. And it was – Portland Meadows is a really special place for me. I worked there for 9 years. I went there when I was a little kid with my dad. We would go down – they used to do a thing – there was, after Longacres closed in 1992, there was a 4-year period where there was no live racing in Seattle. And so there was this place called the Off Track. It was just a big warehouse where they did simulcast betting. And they used to put a little ad in the bottom of the program, hey, a special, $25.99 hotel room in Portland, continental breakfast, free admission, or, passes to Portland Meadows for the races in a program. And so me and my dad would go probably once or twice a year. And Portland Meadows, if you've never been, when you come from Seattle, you cross over the bridge from Washington into Oregon, and it's the second or third exit. It's basically right on the other side of the river. And downtown Portland's another 5-6 miles away. So for the longest time, I thought Portland, the city, was just where Portland Meadows was. And all that's really there at that exit's like, there's a little mall like a Lowe's and a Dick's Sporting Goods and a Mexican restaurant and the Chinese place Mars Meadows and a Burger King and a couple hotels. But, it's not a bustling part of town. But, like, literally, I thought that's Portland. I didn't know that there was this whole city. But so we used to go there all the time when I was a kid. We'd do the same thing at Yakima Meadows when they were open. And so when I got that job, it was really, really a special thing for me because I'd just finished my first season at River Downs. I was still riding high of getting to be an announcer. It was just such a cool thing to do for a living. And Portland called and offered me the job that same year. And so for 3 years, I did Portland in the fall or in the winter and spring, or winter and fall, and then River Downs in the spring and summer. And then eventually became a year rounder at Portland Meadows doing a variety of, media, marketing, and all that kind of stuff. But I left there in December of 2014 to take a job at Louisiana Downs. I went to Louisiana Downs, was there for a few months, and it wasn't a good fit for me on a number of levels, and I just decided, I'm going to move back home to Seattle and try to figure something else out. And so I applied for a couple other announcing jobs at Emerald Downs and Turf Paradise and didn't get either of those. And so I kind of figured that, maybe my announcing days are over, and maybe they are, but it was pretty cool to get to go back up there today and call races. It's a tiny, crappy little booth. It's like 3 feet deep by about 10, 15 feet long. And so there's not a whole lot of a room to, really be that comfortable. And it's like this wooden shack of a press box up there. It is not, for somebody like me with panic and anxiety problems, it's not the most fun place on earth to be. But it's kind of attached to the Equibase office. And Vince Ward, who's a longtime Northwest jockey, some folks might know, he's doing the Equibase there. So it was great to see Vince and talk to him. But man, it was just such a cool day. I was nervous, but And I was using that somebody else's binoculars too that were not very good. So I was a little rusty the first few races, but we shook it off and we got through it. But man, I felt like the last five races, like I was getting it back, and I was like, oh God, this is fun. I forgot how much I like this. And it was really neat. I got a lot of calls from people around the facility, you know, people from the backstretch and downstairs, like, is that you? And I'm like, yeah, because it was kind of a surprise. Like nobody knew I was coming. So I didn't do the changes. And so I didn't jump on till literally the horses went in the gate for the first race. And so it was a really neat experience, and I've kind of been emotional about it the last few races and the rest of the evening. It was just really cool. Portland Meadows means an awful lot to me, and it's, you know, after I left, the Stronach folks kind of cleaned house, and they brought in new management and a lot of new other, you know, folks, and so it's a lot different place now, and I hadn't been back there really since I left, but... You know, the nuts and bolts of it are still there and still very important. So it was a really cool day. It was an emotional day. And it was a fun day. And man, I tell you, the last few races, I would put those on a demo tape. I think I did pretty good the last few. The first races, it was noticeably a little bit of a struggle. And the other cool thing is Vince Ward, the Equibase guy, his wife, Debbie, was a longtime Equibase person and a good kind of close personal friend of mine, and I'm friendly with a lot of their family, and she got her first training win today. So of all the things, I got to announce Debbie Peary's first training win today, which was another part of just what was a really, really cool day. But we'll be home tomorrow. We'll be back doing the regular barn shows. I got a whole pile of games and song parodies and fun stuff and new interviews coming up, and so the road trip portion of the barn is over for at least a while, and probably till probably March. I'll probably go back down to Vegas for a few days for the Horse Player World Series or something like that. So we'll head out to a short timeout. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Kevin Perot, a handicapper. We're going to talk about how he's qualified now, not once, but twice for the Horse Player World Series. Talk a little bit about his past in the game and about his contest strategy. I'm all high on contests now. After the NHC, I'm still buzzing about the contest world and the Horse Play World Series. Now I'm pumped to see how that shakes out, because it is a different beast. It's something that you don't need to qualify for. You can just buy right in, even though Kevin's got a couple of buy-ins now through Bet America. So we'll head out to a short timeout. When we come back, Kevin Perot going to join us on the other side of this break.
Hello, this is Kayla Stratt, and I'm here to tell you all about BetAmerica.com. It is the fastest growing legal, safe, and secure website to place all your bets on horse racing. BetAmerica covers over 200 racetracks from North America, the UK, and my home country, Australia. New players to BetAmerica receive a 100% bonus on your first deposit up to $300. That's the best sign-up bonus available today. It's time to play the BetAmerica way.
All right, back here on the Bet America Radio Network, and we're pleased to go out to beautiful Staten Island, New York, and welcome in our guest. He's a handicapper and now two-time qualifier for the Horse Player World Series through BetAmerica.com's Friday night tournament. Don't forget, we got those Friday night tournaments going on for the rest of the month of February, and you can earn a chance, just like this man, Kevin Perot, to get into the Horse Player World Series in Las Vegas coming up in a couple of months. Kevin, good evening. How are you?
How you doing? I'm doing good.
Good. Well, Kevin, we were talking before the break about your big New York Islanders fan, and you guys are having a little bit of a comeback season this year for the Isles.
Yeah. I'm doing pretty good. Last year they lost in Game 7 to the Caps, who were just a beast. This year I'd like to get another crack at them this year.
So, Kevin, we'll talk about the tournaments and the fact that you're now a two-time qualifier for the Horse Player World Series. But I was curious, how did you get into horse racing? What's your background that got you into the sport?
Oh, sure. My grandfather and his brother worked for the NYRA for 50-plus years. My grandfather's brother actually ran the valet. So if you're a New York horse player of any age on you, you've no doubt seen the car in the middle of the valet with all the keys laid out in it. Well, that was his car. So I learned how to read the racing form at age 15, and was like a track rat. And then as I got older, started cutting out from school, going to the track, you know, with just enough money to get there and back, not enough money to make actual wagers. And then hanging out in the OTBs all in Brooklyn, which I grew up in Brooklyn. I've been hooked ever since. You know, all my 20s, we used to pull triple headers. We'd go to Meadowlands. I'm not a trotter player, but do the simulcast on a Friday night,
yeah.
And then we'd go to Aqueduct or Belmont, whatever was open on Saturday, and do Meadowlands Saturday night. So we pulled the triple header.
So I'm always curious, like I just assume, like back in the day in New York, you know, being a teen or a 20-something going to the track just had to be the coolest thing ever.
Oh, I loved it. I absolutely loved it. I mean, I spent so much time at the track.
Was Aqueduct more your home spot or Belmont? Or which one has a little bit warmer place in your heart?
Well, Aqueduct is where I probably spent most time, but, I mean, I want to try to say this in the nicest way possible. It is a dump. Belmont, it was always empty and so huge. You know, it was just a tremendous place. You know, it's a cathedral of sorts, right? But it was always so painfully empty except for Belmont Stakes Day. And we had, gone to so many Belmont Stakes, and we had so many, horses going for the Triple Crown, just not able to pull it off, So it's nice to see the place packed like that. So, I mean, Belmont was probably my favorite, but Aqueduct was the one I went to the most.
Did you ever go to any of those failed Triple Crown races?
Oh, yeah, because I was a big Silver Charm fan.
Uh-huh.
So I was so disappointed and dejected when he got beat.
Yeah.
Oh,
go ahead. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just think New York racing has this, especially when you're a kid like that, and probably, I'm assuming this is in the 70s, 80s, or 90s. Am I right on that?
Well, see, I'm 41, uh-huh. So I would get, so I guess probably in my 20s is when most of my track going, from 15 on. So, yeah, in the early 90s.
Who were your go-to jocks back then?
I loved Jerry Bailey. It's amazing when I think back, and I always think of Johnny V, and he's still going.
Yeah.
It's like amazing, because I remember my uncle was one of the guys I used to go to the track with all the time, and he was a Chop Chop fan. And I was a Johnny V fan, so not that I'm a big jockey better.
Uh-huh.
I think like a good jockey's not going to put me on a horse, but
yeah.
A bad jockey will turn me off.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise it's the animal with the four legs.
Yeah, and up there you do have a pretty high quality roster from. There's a number of guys, at least I feel this way, there's a number of guys I feel comfortable with backing on the New York circuit on various, whether it's turf or dirt.
Santos was, you think turf, everybody used to love Samin back in the day.
Samin on the green.
That's it. But now, as I'm older now, and taking that trip out to Aqueduct Belmont, actually Monmouth is closer, and it's a lot more family friendly. I have four children, so this past summer, we went out maybe three or four times to Monmouth, and the kids love it, and it's a nice day, And it's a quick shot right in Garden State. So.
Yeah, Monmouth's a beautiful track. I haven't been there yet, but I've seen all the photos, and a couple of my good friends have been the last couple of announcers there at Travis Stone and Frank, and so I've gotten to see numerous pictures of it. It just looks like they all say it's just a really, really cool place, and they get some really nice crowds there in the summer, don't they?
Nice full cards too, 12 race cards.
Yeah,
you get three pick fours on the card. It's nice, and I did a couple of the in-house. Handicapping tournaments there, where they give away NHC seats and whatnot. I wasn't able to cash, but it's a good experience.
Yeah, for sure. And we're going to talk about the tournaments. I wanted to go back a few weeks and talk about that first tourney qualifier. I think you were the first winner of our Horse Player World Series qualifiers a few weeks back. What do you remember about that night and earning your seat to the Horse Player World Series?
Yeah, that first one, and I have to say it. It was very lucky. That was a very fortunate win. One bomb basically catapulted me right up into contention, and it was a floppy track at Delta. And I'm a database handicapper, and this particular horse on the handicapping analyst that I was using for this race, the horse was actually ranked third, so it wasn't so far out of it. But being that I was toward the middle to end of the pack, it was a cap horse, and I took it and was able to win. And the very next race at Turfway, I caught one that was 4-1 on the morning line, but drifted up to 11. So I was able to score on that. And then the lightning started. The skies opened up at Delta, and they canceled the last 2 weeks.
Oh, that's right. So, yeah, I remember
yeah,
that.
So that was very fortunate. You know?
So take us to that moment when that happens, because I know for me, like when I, you know, in the age of ADW, it's not like you're, you know, at the NHC where there's 300 guys around you and you're cheering. Are you like in your den, you know, hooting and hollering, or are you just, yeah, you know, are you with the kids?
It's very rare. I have in my house, I have a third floor loft, right? My father lives with us, so that has been turned into like his bedroom, but that's where I have my computer set up and, you know, my computer screens, and that's where I do all my handicapping and watching the races. And I'm, for the most part, I'm kind of statue kind of guys.
Uh-huh.
I don't really get too riled up. Sometimes if I got one, you know, a longer price horse that's, you know, I can cheer him home the final solo once in a blue. Like even my dad will say, oh, you know, I had something on that one, because I'm usually quiet.
Uh-huh.
You know, I think I've always been that way too, even when going to the track. Well, you kind of have to. You kind of have to in New York City OTDs, because if you're too loud about a winner, you're going to have a whole bunch of guys asking you for money and following you to the window. So, you know how that goes. You could walk, at one point in time, you could walk into any OTD in Brooklyn. I could find about half a dozen people who owe me money in there. So.
Yeah, one of my favorite scenes ever in Seinfeld's when Kramer hits that winner and the guy comes right up to him with the thing like, I'm going to chase you, and you know, chases him all through the subway. And you know, I always thought that was maybe a little bit embellished, but every time I talk to New Yorkers, they say that, like, no, it's like you really had to watch yourself.
Yeah, oh, no doubt about it. I'll tell you, one time, I mean, the biggest win I ever had was a pick six win at Hollywood, and the local OTBs didn't have enough money to cash it, so I had to actually drive into the Manhattan and to cash the ticket.
Mm-hmm.
And I was watching all these people, like, looking, and I had to tip a guy to walk me to my car, you know, like, because I was just so nervous about it, you know?
Oh, I don't blame you. I mean, I've had a couple of, when I say big wins, you know, 7,000 or 8,000, and, you know, it's enough to where you can't fold your wallet, which is cool, but you do, I put it in my front pocket, and man, I had my hand on it the whole way out.
Oh, yeah.
One of the best ones I ever saw was, you know, playing poker and, up at the tribal casino by my old house, and they had a bad beat jackpot that was like $250,000, like $250,000, so everybody's trying to get it, and the guy who took the bad beat, who got the big share of it, was like an 85-year-old retired doctor, and he wanted cash. And so they gave him $125,000, and he's got his cane. And the whole time we're waiting to get paid, he kept making the joke, here's my retirement. You know, and he was a doctor. He was doing fine. But
he
walked out with a big grocery sack full of cash. And the security guards took him out. And all I kept thinking, I said, somebody's going to follow this poor old guy back to his condo.
Oh, don't believe it. When we left the OTB that night, I my wife was driving, actually, and I told her, I said, circle the block a couple times. I just want to make sure nobody's following. You know, because they give you these big pink envelopes. Well, OTB's not around anymore, but
yeah.
When it was a $61,000 pick six after taxes. I think it was like 47 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So they give you these big pink envelopes that was sitting in my lap, you know, just on the car ride home. And it's just so funny how people who don't gamble or don't get involved, how they can't really grasp it. Because I'm explaining to my wife on the drive home, like, this is a double carryover pool. If you parlayed these horses, it would have paid like $12,000, and I got 61. But she goes, you sound like a degenerate right now. I said, no, this is the opposite of a degenerate.
You know? I made a value play.
Right.
none of my ex-girlfriends ever understood value play, because I used to joke I was a yellow number capper. If it was 2 minutes to post and the minutes to post turned yellow, that's when I was looking for the next track to fire off at. But that's a whole other episode. Kevin Perreault joining us, and he is now a two-time qualifier to the Horse Player World Series. You know, you mentioned playing in the live tournaments to go to the NHC. So the Horse Player World Series, this is going to be your first real big national, you know, kind of tournament. Do you have a strategy going into it? And obviously now it probably changes a little bit with this second qualify.
It does. It does a little bit. Because now I was talking to Merv about this the other night, how having two, because he had asked me if I was going to go for a third, and I said I may. And he said, what do you think is more of an advantage, having two over one or three over two? And I said, no, two over one, definitely, because now it's not so much as, you know, finding your price horses or finding your winners. It's more now you're looking for vulnerable favorites, or not even so much favorites, but vulnerable low-priced horses. Mm-hmm. So if you can pinpoint in on those races where you really think it's right for a long shot, well, you could be right and wrong and be like, oh, look at this, this big price came in, I had the right idea, but I just didn't catch it. Well, now with two tickets, you can take two different horses in that race. Now, some people might say, well, if you're putting in two horses in the same race, you're automatically betting a loser. But, no, I think you really do have an equity edge here, and one of the tickets will start to outclass the other one, and that'll be your main ticket. It just gives you so much more leverage.
Talking with Kevin Perot, a handicapper from New York. You can find him on Twitter at KevRock, right? KevRoc.
That's right.
And, it's interesting. I had a conversation with Vic Stauffer, the former Hollywood announcer. He was at the NHC. We were talking about that because he had two entries, and he was saying that it's not normally something he does. He usually just buys in one time. And he ended up having both entries kind of finish right about the same spot. And so, he said it for him, it was a big learning experience of how to use that double entry thing. Is two entries something you have experience with?
Well, yeah, I've been playing most of my tournaments on another tournament site that I've been playing on since like 2012, and mm-hmm. I always try to get two if I can, to get two entries if I can, just for that reason. And now I've been really excited about these Bet America tournaments and starting to spread their legs, and I know I'm going to be playing in a lot more of those. But having two over one, I think, is a big edge. I listened to that. I mean, I haven't missed an episode yet of The Barn. And I heard what Vic said, and I've always been a big fan of Vic's. Obviously, my big pick six win was Hollywood. So, always be a big fan of his and follow him on the Pace Advantage boards. And I've also played against him in some of the tournaments on the other sites and stuff. But I kind of, when I was listening to this, when I was listening to what he had said about it, and he had made a claim that, if I only had one ticket, I would have come in. And I was kind of like, no, I don't know about that. I'm not too sure because, like I was saying before, one ticket starts to outclass the other one, and then your second ticket is available for pretty much bombs.
Yeah.
So you play bombs on that second one, and your main plays on the first. Now, if that second ticket caught up to the first one and they were both around equal, then that means that's probably the ones you wouldn't have had on the first one.
Yeah.
Probably. I mean, I'm guessing there, but,
I think one thing I did, and one thing Vic said too that really did strike with me, is that the guys that are playing in these big tournaments are excellent tournament players. I mean, not just handicappers, because there is such a strategy to that. And you've had some success now with this weekly Friday night tournament. Do you find that it is different? Is it different handicapping, or is it just different strategy when you're playing a tournament versus when you're just playing the races?
Oh, for tournaments, it's definitely different strategies, and different strategies within the different types of tournaments themselves. I mean, like, you have, your win-place bullet tournaments, and you have your win-place show bullet tournaments, which would be approached in totally different fashion. And then, like, in the second qualifier that I made was, I think that one was much more rewarding than the first. There was a lot less of a luck factor there with the lightning. But not only that, it was what they call a handcuff tournament, or as other ones will call, like, lockdown, mm-hmm. or ones where you have to make all your selections before the races start. You can't switch. So, that is a whole other thing, because now not only are you looking for value, you have to be very good at predicting final odds as well. So you get an idea of what value you're going to get.
Kevin Perot joining us. We're talking about the Horse Player World Series qualifier, that he's now a double qualifier. And the one you won last week, I'm looking at the results, and no cap horses. But you got off to the first couple races, you didn't hit much. And then race three, you got $20 to the bankroll. Race four, $1,760. Race five, $1,520. Just a couple races later, $1,620, $1,080. And you did have the one bigger price toward the end, Delta Downs, with Miss Nala, $3,280. After that hit, are you starting to feel pretty good, like you got a big shot?
Yeah, it was hitting those like three or four mid-range prices, 9-2, 5-1. So that felt good, and it was like a bit of a dogfight there between the top, I want to say like four or five guys. We were kind of exchanging the lead back and forth. But when this Nala won, I was feeling it right then. I said, I think I'm in a good spot. I think I've got it. But then I was kind of lamenting my last pick, because the pick in the last race was the chalk. Now, it was the morning chalk. I thought it would probably go off somewhere around 8-5, 2-1, something like that. Horse actually, I think, went off at like 4-5. And I'm like, well, now if this is a tournament that where you can change your picks, that's a free square for me anyway, the lead that I had. So I would try to take another horse where I could possibly block someone. So luckily the horse galloped home, but I essentially had no pick. You know,
Are Delta Turfway and those type tracks, are those tracks that you have followed traditionally or just been playing for these tournaments mostly?
No, I definitely follow them, but Delta has been kryptonite to me. I've done very poorly at Delta the past couple of seasons. These last two tournaments, though, here, very fortunate with the outcomes, but the Bullring tracks have given me a bit of trouble. The only one I'd have to say no is Charlestown, the 4.5 furlong races, for some reason, to do very well at. But otherwise, I've been taking some lumps on those tracks. Turfway, you really never know what you're going to get, too, but they're good for prices, really good for prices, same as like a Vanjoin. You know, a lot of these night tracks.
Yeah, I've always said Turfway Park is one that I've just never gotten a grasp on. And some nights, like you said, you'd find one, and you can get some bombs at Turfway. Like, does it scare you when you're in the lead and, you know, there's a big, 12-horse field of non-winners of two at Turfway coming up?
Absolutely. But one of the good things about the Bet America tournaments, where I can see some people might not like it, I do like it. Because, like I say, in the modeling that I do on my database handicapping, I also try to, I have it's a dynamic filter where I try to predict final odds based on the type of race and how the public has bet in the past. There's certain handicapping factors that differ by track, class, lots of different factors. Now, if you're good at predicting final odds, you can feel secure in the pick that you make, even though it locks at 2 minutes. Mm-hmm. Like some sites, it'll go right up until they load. But on Bet America, it locks at about 2 minutes to go. But I like that in the fact that if you're nursing a lead and, you know, you're worried about some horses that could catch you, you have 2 minutes to hedge if you wanted to. Like if you see a couple guys who are on 10-1, 15-1 that could beat you, go in your ADW and drop a few bucks on it just to cover, just in case, sanity insurance.
Kevin Perreault joining us. He's now a two-time qualifier to the Horseplay World Series, which is coming up end of March, I believe, in Las Vegas. That's right. And, Kevin, you had talked earlier, you mentioned you're a database player. What exactly does that mean?
I'm sorry?
You'd said earlier you're a database player. What exactly does that mean?
Oh, yes. Yes, I've been since, I want to say 2009, I've been using the Horse Street Handicapper. HSH. It's software that's put out by Dave Schwartz. He's a great handicapping mind, and I'm also blessed to call him a friend. And his website is pacemakestherace.com, where we have a lot of kicking around of ideas. All the users get together, and what's great about it is it's a database. So you download all the racetracks from all around North America. And you use that pool of races to build filters, go back, and there's 10,000-plus handicapping factors that that are used within the program. And, you download the files, and you can build all these models. And I love just sitting there and testing, just throwing things up against the wall and seeing what kind of patterns and what kind of handicapping angles pop out in certain situations. And what's great about it is that there's a lot of users of the program, but you and I can both be looking at the same program and come up with totally different horses because we're using different angles and factors.
So it's almost like you create your own past performances in a way.
Yeah. I mean, the past performances are in there, and, they get downloaded into it. But what you look at, you totally create. So, like, I have my own filters for survivor tournaments, horses coming in the top three. And I mean, you could set it up by track, by circuit, you name it. You can build a filter for it. So, like, over the past few nights and probably up until Vegas, I've been looking at the 6 or 7 tracks that I think may be part of Horse Player World Series and building models off of the past two meets for each of those tracks' last two meets. And breaking it down over distances, the track, the distance, the class, and just seeing what factors, what handicapping factors rise to the top, which ones get winners or which ones get price winners. You know, you can search for hit rate or for value. So trying to do some homework there so when the time comes, I'll be prepared.
And the Horseplay World Series is different than HC. Like, there isn't it that there's no mandatories? Like, you pick all the races you want?
Yes, and I love that idea about it. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, I was talking to Barbara Boley about this because she was in it. I think she was in last year. Mm-hmm. And I just asked her if she had any insights about it. And she had said, I think it's 18 races per day you have plays. You can make 18 plays from, I think it's 6 tracks.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, if it's, let's just say for the sake of argument, you got 9 races a card, 6 tracks, you got 54 races a day possible, and you have to choose 18
of them.
So you're
playing a third
of it. Yeah, so like a third. And what, favorites traditionally win at about a third. So, I mean, if you can find 18 vulnerable favorites, you got yourself 18 solid plays, and you could do something with it.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun tournament. I'm excited for that. Having seen the NHC, I have, you know, I having just experienced it this weekend, I definitely have a little bit of the tournament bug. And I just found it a real fascinating experience. And I think, like you said, the Horseplay World Series going to be a little bit different kind of tournament. But I'm sure there'll be a lot of the same faces there.
Oh, I'm sure. Well, I was talking to Merv about this, too, and I was saying how there may actually be some more fish in this tournament, so to speak, because anybody can walk up and plunk 1500.
Yeah.
In there. So, I mean, like, you know, using poker parlance, I mean, it may be a minefield you have to navigate through, but in the NHC, it's really, there's no weak link in the NHC because you have to qualify to get in it.
Yeah.
You know, so to even cash in that tournament, I think, is a big deal.
Yeah, it was impressive to watch because a lot of the guys who were up front, man, I mean, they were just not giving up, and they just they didn't come back to the field on that final day. So it was pretty interesting to see just how good those guys are. Well, Kevin, I really appreciate your time, and great congratulations on the not just one but 2 qualifiers now. So do you still go? Do you go for 3 or what's the max? 3 the max, right?
I mean, like anything else, right? It's value, and that's one of the good things about tournaments too. It's like before I was playing tournaments, I would be, you know, parimutuel player like everyone else, and everybody attacks different pools. Some people are show players, but I got into the horizontal wagers, like, you know, a lot of people have with the pick 4s and pick 6s and things like that. But you're stuck having to bet the races that make up that sequence. Here in a tournament, you could whiff on a couple of races and still be right in the mix. You whiff on a race in a horizontal, you're on the rail. So, you know, making up the ground in there is, you can do it. You know, so playing a third tournament, it's all about trying to get a third one. It's all about the value of it. So if I see that it's like an overlay, like the last one. The last one was, what, 30? I think it was 38 people when I decided to jump in.
Yeah, 39 total.
Right. So, yeah, I got in late and closed it out at, like, 39. So, I mean, that's an overlay. If I see something else like that, yeah, sure, why not?
Yeah. Well, it'll be a lot of fun, and folks can, when they're playing tournaments, keep an eye out for Kev Rock and find him on Twitter at that same time. And, Kevin, look forward to hopefully seeing you down in Las Vegas for the Horseplay World Series.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. Thanks,
right. Thanks a lot, Kevin. Have a good night. We'll be right back on the Bet America Radio Network.
This is the Bet America Radio Network. You're in the barn with Jason Beam.
All right, my thanks to Kevin Perreault for joining us here in the Bet America Radio Network, and my thanks to all you out in listener land. I appreciate everybody bearing with us through the road trip and tuning in to all the shows. We've gotten some great feedback about the show and people being really kind. And like I said, if you ever have comments, questions, please email me, barn@betamerica.com. That's barn@betamerica.com. You can find me on Twitter at BeamyAwards. If you have guests you want to hear from, let me know. We'd love to get folks on. If you're a handicapper, you want to take your shot at maybe a weekend preview or something, shoot me an email, barn@betamerica.com. So we'll be back home from home base tomorrow, and we got some very fun stuff planned for you, and we look forward to seeing you next time on The Barn.